Okay, so I've spoken a bit about how Mahayana scriptures legitimize themselves. I've spoken about the fact that they saw themselves as being authored by the Buddha, but not the Buddha of the early Buddhist scriptures, more like a trans-historical Buddha, a cosmic Buddha. And in fact, different scriptures, there are many different Buddhas that appear in them. They're not always our Buddha, who's known as Shakyamuni Buddha. There's many other Buddhas too. Secondly, I looked at how the visionary imagery of Mahayana scriptures was one of the means by which they demonstrated their legitimacy, emphasizing what's seen above what's heard. And then finally, I looked briefly at the teaching of skillful means, particularly how it is used to underpin the legitimacy of Mahayana texts. Skillful means is quite a complex teaching, and we could have a whole talk simply on that topic, but I was just identifying one feature of that teaching that I wanted to emphasize for the purposes of this evening. So having done that, the question arises, why read a Mahayana scripture? What will be the value of reading one? I've already underlined that they can be very, very repetitive, even tediously so. Some of them are hundreds, if not thousands, of pages long. You know, life's quite short. There are many things to do. Why, you know, waste your time on reading a narrative that appears to go round and round in circles and then completely lose its main direction and go on a completely different direction, which is some of the way that some of the Mahayana scriptures unfold. You know, what will be the value of reading that? Seemingly, many of them have very little doctrinal content. Certainly the doctrinal content could sometimes be summarized in a couple of pages, and yet the scripture might be 1,000 pages. So why not, you know, just read The Eternal Legacy, which is a book written by my teacher Sangharakshita, which contains summaries of all these texts. Just read the summary, and then that's all you need, because you'll have got the teaching. You'll have got the main message then. Well, I think I've said really something about why I think they're worth reading, but I think that I'd like to underline that perhaps by using an analogy. Not long ago, I was in London and I went to the Tate Modern. In fact, I go to the Tate Modern every time I go to London. I don't know why I always end up there. But I went there and there was an exhibition by Mark Rothko on at the time. I don't know if any of you know the painter Rothko's work. But what they had set up was some very, very large Rothko canvases. And Rothko's paintings tend to be, well, more or less one colour or two colours. There's not an awful lot going on. In fact, you might just think, well, somebody's just painted a wall, really. And so what? I mean, I was painting my kitchen earlier today. You know, surely that's just as good as Rothko. But one of the critics writing about Rothko's painting said that what Rothko's paintings do is they create what they were describing as an immersive environment. In other words, as you stand in front of a Rothko painting, or maybe even if you're surrounded by a number of them, you become engulfed by the paintings, or you become immersed in the colour that comes out of the painting. And when I was there in the Tate Modern, I very much had this experience of walking in. It was almost like walking into a mood. That's how I felt, and the particular ones that were striking me are some of the kind of maroon type paintings, which maybe some of you have seen. They're quite subdued colours and they're quite contemplative, but you walk in there and you suddenly feel like you're in this slightly different space that somehow starts to open out for you. And even though seemingly there's nothing happening in the paintings, when you look at them you start to have a sense of being kind of drawn into them, maybe, and even through them into a different space, a different emotional space, maybe. I'm very fond of the metaphor of portals, and I think that one could think of these paintings as being portals into, well, maybe Rothko's imagination, maybe an expanded version of our own imagination. I don't know exactly, but certainly some elevated state, some more vibrant, more alive condition. So this is Rothko. So I think this is a really good analogy for a Mahayana Buddhist scripture. If we read a Mahayana scripture and that's really attend to it and really allow ourselves to enter into it, then we don't only read, we participate. The scripture is not simply a text, It's a living drama. It's a visionary drama that we enter into and participate in. We are there. We are constructing what the Mahayana scripture is. We're bringing it alive, or it's becoming alive. It's becoming activated, we could say, through our encounter with it, through our reading of it. And the more alive we are to this, the greater effect that it can have. The images begin to soak in. The narrative begins to affect us. Our emotions become engaged. And we feel ourselves transported into a different state, an expanded state that perhaps offers some kind of analogy, not saying it's the same as, but some kind of analogy for an awakened state of mind. So that's, you know, that's why I would say, or that's one of the reasons why I'd say it's worth reading a Mahayana scripture. Just to kind of say a little bit more about that, another way of approaching that would be to say that the scripture, through our participation in it, through our reading of it, unveils what's called a samadhi. Samadhi is often translated as meditation, but in a lot of Mahayana scriptures, a samadhi is a particular, I'll call it a vision world that a bodhisattva lives in or dwells in. And these vision worlds are what are unveiled through a number of Mahayana scriptures. So through reading the scripture becomes the portal into the vision world. It becomes the portal into the samadhi, which is a state of heightened consciousness, a state of perhaps awakening, at least a visionary analogy of the state of awakening. Okay, so I just want to finish off. So I've tried to offer some kind of account, some kind of introduction to Mahayana Buddhist scriptures. As I explained at the beginning, I've not really offered an overview of the whole corpus of Mahayana scriptures, but I've been focusing very much on a particular strand of Mahayana scriptures, and that is those particularly that are concerned with quite extensive visual imagery and mythic narrative. And I've briefly introduced you to a couple of those, the Lotus Sutra notably, and the Gandavya Sutra, another one. So I'm hoping that, you know, through this brief introduction, your interest has been engaged, has been sharpened, and that you may go away yourself and take up a Mahayana scripture and participate in it yourself. Thank you.